Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Scott Stemmen podcast. It is good. It's a good day today because A, I have my voice back. So if you listened to our last episode, I hope you got a lot of good information from it. But I'm also sorry that you, every time I talked, your ears cringed with my graggly voice as it was trying to come back to life from the dead. But joining me today is Micah Current. Micah, how are you doing today?
I still have my voice, so apparently it's a good day. Funny enough, though, my wife, we were listening to last week's episode in the car over the weekend, and I forgot to tell her that you had lost your voice. She was like, "What is wrong with his voice?" And I'm like, "Yeah, he did a thing over the weekend before, and he blew his voice
out." He's like, man, is he just trying to be funny the whole time by speaking in a weird accent on the podcast? Oh, my goodness. But, yeah, that was a wild time. And speaking of wild times, story's gone wild. Micah, I found out yesterday that your grandmother shares a birthday with me on March 3rd. So
that's correct.
That's not my story that I share birthday with your grandma.
I didn't know if you wanted me to go first or if
that was what we were. Yeah, go ahead and go first because mine is highly embarrassing and it also involves my birthday, so might as well. We'll save that one for last.
My grandmother's birthday was yesterday and she celebrated 86 years of life, which is
cool.
Pretty awesome, right? So, Alicia and I, she was in the hospital, I don't know, 3-4 weeks ago. She had really bad pneumonia. She had fell in her bathroom at home and didn't have a lot of strength in her legs. So the doctors decided, hey, we're going to send her to rehab, put her in an assisted living for, 3 to 4 weeks to get her strength back before she can go back home. And so yesterday, every year on my grandma's birthday, I get her flowers and a card and I go see her and spend some time with her. And so Alicia and I decided, we were running around yesterday. I was like, it's grandma's birthday. We got to go grab her a card, do all those things. And so we go to this nursing home, which I was familiar with the facility because my grandfather was in there when he was still alive. But we get there and you have to sign in. There's a lady at the front desk, get to sign in, tell her who you're visiting, the number, sign in, sign out times, et cetera. And so, we get there and the lady at the front desk is like, are you here for the party? And I'm like, what party? She's like, the birthday party. I'm like, well, my grandma's birthday is today. She's like, oh, I don't know if I'm supposed to tell you that or not. So we get there and apparently like my uncles put together a birthday party for my grandma. And so like there was this open house and it was really cool because a lot of our family showed up and it was kind of an impromptu. And my uncle was like, I only invited like 6 to 8 people and like 20 showed up. So it was really cool. That's not the story's gone wild. So my grandmother, who is, like I said, 86 years old, her hearing is not the best. So she has hearing aids. She's been in this nursing home 2 to 3 weeks. And so apparently, so her birthday was yesterday. Apparently Saturday night or Friday night into Saturday night, they had somebody in her room cleaning and somebody accidentally threw away her hearing aids. And then so it was like this guy's first day on the job. He throws away my grandmother's hearing aids and then he quit. He quit the very next day. So like they couldn't ask him where the hearing aids were or where he threw them away. So the nursing home is going to replace my grandmother's hearing aids, which is the cool part. The bad part is my grandmother's at this birthday party and she can't hear nothing. We're all like yelling at her and telling her happy birthday. But you have to get about this far from her for her to hear what you're saying. And so,
oh my gosh.
So in reference to Stories Gone Wild, man, I was so mad. Dude threw away her hearing aids.
I would figured someone would know. That's the thing. I would figure, I mean, hearing aids are pretty, it's not like they would just be.
Well, unless you went like on the counter and just started like, you know, brushing stuff into a trash bag or something.
I mean, I guess if there was like a lot of like Kleenexes or whatnot and you're just, and they just happen to be in the pile and they're covered up, you didn't see them, I could see that. But man,
yeah,
that's kind of hard. Wow.
And hearing aids aren't cheap.
Oh, no, they're not. No. That's why when I go to concerts, I put earplugs in my ears because it's like, too. You know, and I think there's one time I went to a concert, and I forgot them, and it was like, oh gosh, I'm not. That's when I went and saw Zayo, and that was like, ooh, that's not good. So, yeah, but either regardless, like, yeah, man, I'm glad that the nursing home is actually going to be paid for the replacement for them because it was kind of, you know, their fault. Yeah. All right.
So anyway, cool. And then I found out your birthday and her birthday were on the same day, which is interesting.
Yeah. So my story's going wild has to do with my birthday. So I have a widget on my phone. So it tells me everybody's birthday that is on that same day. So then not only like within contacts that I have in my phone, but also through Facebook. So first thing, usually what I do is if I'm in the morning, I have some time to kill, I'll go and I'll say happy birthday to everybody. Well, there's a certain gentleman that I'm friends with who happened to have two accounts. And I'm like, okay. And I thought that this person had passed away. And usually if I... Oh, man. So...
Well, you told me... Just for the listeners, you told me a little about this before we started recording.
So... Wait, so now here's the thing. This person's name had a son of the same name. So it's like my dad's name's Scott, my name's Scott, okay? So it was hard for me, but I knew someone died in that family, and I thought it was this guy. So, and he has two profiles. So usually when I know someone who's passed away and it's their birthday, I will put, you know, happy birthday, RIP, you know, or I'll put like happy birthday in heaven or, you know, something kind of nice. And usually like, you know, especially like at my last church, some of the people who I've, you know, done their funerals and I was friends with them on Facebook, I'll do that. Family always appreciates me that I remember, you know, their loved one that has passed. So I go, I'm going down the line. Of course, this guy's two profiles. So I do it on both separate profiles, go through it. And then I get a text from the pastor's wife at my home church in Talmadge, wishing me a happy birthday, but also saying, hey, this person is not dead. I forgot that it wasn't him who passed away. It was his son who passed away. So now I'm like, oh, shoot. So immediately I get back on Facebook. I go type this person's name. I click on it. I find me saying happy birthday, RIP, hit the three dots, delete, went to the other profile, delete, and then I went back and put happy birthday, and just kind of left it. And then the pastor's wife ended up calling me 50 minutes later. And I said, hey. And she's like, hey. And I said, and I immediately said, don't worry. I went through there. I deleted my post and I reposted just happy birthday without the RIP. And she just starts laughing. She goes, well, yeah, I knew that the family would probably freak out if they saw something like that. And you would be very embarrassed. And I'm like, dude, I'm already embarrassed. And this is already like going to be a long Sunday already.
It's mortifying.
So friends, my advice to you is before, if you happen to say happy birthday to someone who's dead and you put something like happy birthday in heaven or anything else, please make sure that they're actually dead and not alive. Oh my gosh. I've never been, there's very few things that get me embarrassed and blush, but man, that did it. That did it on my birthday. Like, oh my gosh. How did I make such a grave error on that? Oh, goodness. Now I'm just going to keep laughing about it because it's hilarious, but also tragic as well. So, all right. So, Michael, what are we talking about today?
I don't know. We talked about a couple of things, but one of the things I kind of pitched to you was that, not necessarily first impressions, but like what, how can we like be better about people that are visiting our churches and creating a space where people feel welcome and people actually want to come back without being overbearing? And so my wife and I were running around yesterday doing some errands before we went to see my grandmother, and we were just talking about, finding a new church and, kind of like the parameters of that. And the hard part for me, I guess, is that I have served or led worship in the majority of the churches in the small town that we live in. And so we kind of know what to expect when we go into certain spaces. And we know what churches do well and we know what churches don't do well. And we're just driving around town yesterday talking through, some of the prospects of what that would look like. And so I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on, what do you think churches do well? What do you think churches could do better? I have some thoughts and kind of just open it up for discussion.
All right, so you said that you and your wife were talking about things. So what were some of the things that you talked about? We'll just kind of start off there, and then I can kind of fill in on, good idea, bad idea.
Well, we, for example, we there's a church in our community that are, it's they're great people, but they're super overbearing and they come off really, really strong, right? And they want you to come to Bible study and they want you to come to small groups and they want you to come to every event that they have and they want you to be involved in their circle, which is not bad because they want you to be a part of the community. But when the majority of them are like our parents' age, for example, like if I wanted to go hang out with my parents, I'd go hang out with my parents, if that makes sense. And so there's not a lot of people that are younger. And so it feels like we're going to go hang out with our parents, but they also, it feels like what they do very, very well is also overwhelming because there's too much, if that makes sense. That's one example. I mean,
And I would say that sometimes, and I think it also depends on, church culture and kind of how the pastor communicates how to engage visitors in your church. Like when you think about when a visitor walks into a church, they probably meet a greeter, they probably meet an usher. They probably go in, and a lot of times people who go to a church for a first time are there super early, like sometimes 15, 20 minutes before service even starts, right? So sometimes they may be there, and your visitors maybe, and especially if you have a place where Sunday school's before your morning worship service, you may have people who show up, sit down, and they're not even greeted at the door because your greeters are not even out there because they're still in Sunday school. So I think as a pastor, when you're engaging kind of how things flow from the day you arrive at the church on Sunday morning to the day you end your Sunday morning serve, all your Sunday morning services, you have to kind of see, okay, what's the flow? When do my greeters need to show up? And then, I think you're right. Like a lot of times when you think about, smaller churches, when they talk to you, they're willing to like convince, they want to make an argument because they want you to be a member, especially if they know, hey, we're a smaller church, we're struggling, we're not making budget each month, we're slowly losing money. So a lot of times the goal for especially some churches, and this doesn't necessarily have to be smaller churches, it can be medium-sized churches, and sometimes even larger churches too, where the goal is, I want to get this person into the church so they can contribute to not just the finances of the church, but the life of the church, everything. So that's what, like you said, like they're telling you about come to Bible study, come to this, come to that. And really, a lot of times when you think about visitors, the way you can effectively retain visitors is usually by a couple things. what you say at the beginning, what they're experiencing during the service, and then how you follow up and what happens at the end and how you follow up. And I think those are kind of the three vital pieces of what makes an effective visitor become a returning visitor that eventually becomes a member of the church. So when you greet somebody at a church, you know, I think a lot of times I've always liked to do the method of three when a visitor comes in. So first, if a visitor comes in, are they being greeted by the greeter or an usher? Hey, welcome to the church. You know, what, you know, even ask questions like, oh, what brought you here? You know, what made you want to come visit us today? And just kind of hear, oh, I've heard your podcast. I saw videos. A friend, oh, I'm friends with this, or I'm so-and-so's brother or sister. So you kind of know a base of, okay, how did they find out about us? Because that's going to give you a key on what's working. How are people knowing about our church? Oh, they're knowing about it through our website. Fantastic. They're knowing about it through our Facebook page. Great. That helps give information. So then, you know, and then you could say like, oh, if there's any, you know, make them sign a visitor card. Like, hey, since you're a first time visitor, here's our welcome center, or here's a visitor card. If you can fill this out and put it in the offering plate or return it to the pastor, you know, we would greatly appreciate it so we can kind of get to know more about you. And that's kind of your way to follow up with somebody. And then when they enter to the sanctuary, there's a couple other things you can do. Is there somebody in the sanctuary that could go and just talk with them or sit with them? Because a lot of times people are creatures of comfort that they sit in mm-hmm. their own spots and they don't leave. So if you have someone sitting in a pew that may be one row behind you or one row in front of you, but then the thing is they're sitting all by themselves. And it's like, you know, you could do anything. Either you can get up and you can sit with them, or you could talk to them and go, hey, would you like to come sit with me? And then you can just invite them to come sit with you. And I think either moving or inviting also is a good way of, because then you're sitting by them, you're talking with them, and you're building that relationship right there instead of kind of being in your own little bubble within your own little seating assignment. So, and then of course, you know, the third part would be the pastor. You know, if the pastor noticed that there's someone new there, talk to him or make someone aware. Pastor, we've had three new visitors. So then that way the pastor can be on the lookout for them. And I think that's something you could do, whether it's a smaller church or a bigger church, is make sure the pastor or someone from the pastoral staff introduces themselves and talks to that person. I think if you can do those three things and have those three people really engaged, that's going to really start a good basis of trying to get that person to become a return visitor or a regular member.
Yeah. So a couple of things. One, I went to a conference years ago at Church God National Conference in Oklahoma City at Crossings. And for those that know about Crossings Community Church, it's a rather large church. I mean, 10, 12,000 people, multi-site. Anyway, the conference the convention didn't start till like Monday. So I had flown in, you know, I flew in on Saturday and was going to go to church on Sunday. So, you know, my friend Josh, who's one of the worship pastors there, was like, come and check it out. And, you know, we would love to host you. But one of the things that I really noticed that they did well for their church service was that, like, you get out of the car, and there's somebody in the parking lot greeting you. You get to the front door, there's somebody at the door greeting you. You get to the venue, whether it's the sanctuary, which is their traditional service, or their venue service, which is more contemporary, there's somebody at the door of each of those venues greeting you. And then there's somebody at the seat, like at the seats or the pews or whatever. So by the time you sit down, you've talked to four people and you feel welcome. I thought that was a brilliant concept. Something else that I thought about when you were kind of, you know, talking through, you know, the process of folks, you know, in your congregation, you know, being equipped to that. you had said something where it was like people are creatures of habit, which I totally agree with because I'm one. And so, how often do we miss that conversation, or how often do we miss a visitor coming in because we're not paying attention and we're just used to seeing the same people every week? I think it's super important and crucial to remind people and equip people that are serving in those roles, whether they're, working at the, what do you call that, the connection center or the welcome desk or whatever it is when you first walk into the church. Like, just remind people, hey, if you don't know them, ask them if they're new. If you don't know them, welcome them to church. Tell them you're glad they're here. Have teams, right, that will, sit with them, like you're saying, and have people that will, like, especially like if people have never been in your building before, hey, where's the bathrooms? Hey, is there water fountains? Hey, where can my kids go? Like, if you offer kids ministry, like I have students, where, how can I get plugged in with, X, Y, and Z? Hey, where's your sanctuary? All of these things that, would seem like common sense, but like you said earlier, like some people kind of like, oh, I've been going to this church for 20 years. I know where the sanctuary is. I know where the bathrooms are. But what if the person who walked in doesn't, and they're new, and you forget about that? And so, like, that could be just a red flag. And on the other side of that, my wife is very introverted, and she doesn't want to be overwhelmed as soon as she walks in the door. So I think there has to be a balance.
And I think that's why, when I think about, because you have to think about the introverts as well. Because, and that's the thing, like, you don't want to hear every single ministry that your church offers to this person. Just a simple, hey, welcome to church. What brings you here? Oh, you found us on Facebook. Great. Well, here's the sanctuary. If you need to use the bathroom, they're right there. And if you have any more info, and if you want to know more information about the church, here's our welcome center. And Susan can really help you answer any questions you have about the church, and you can kind of leave it at that and give it to them. So you don't need to, again, you don't need to do a little sermonette when someone walks through your doors. Just a
You
simple
don't want to
greeting.
overwhelm them.
Exactly. You just want to be very simple, very basic, but also to the point too. And again, try to get as information, a little bit of information as you can. So I think, that's kind of like, I guess, would be like your bread. If I talk about, the opening, the middle, and the closer to first time visitors, I think in the middle, when they're having the experience at your church service, there's a couple things that you have to be aware of. And I think one thing is, I would be, is be aware of your senses. So for an example, what I mean by that is sight, smell, sound. So if I walk into a sanctuary and they start playing songs and it is, and the decibel level is too high or it's super loud, that's going to be a problem. If I go in there and I go into your sanctuary and I see ladders hanging on the side of the wall and things that look out of place, or I see that this carpet was from definitely installed in the 1970s and it's filled with stains, or if I see, like, stains in the pews because someone kind of, thought they were going to fart, but it wasn't a fart and it stained it and no one cleaned it up, and you just have that little like stain right there in the pew. Like, these are things that you have to be aware of. And then also, if I'm going to the bathroom and it just smells awful, or I go into your sanctuary and it smells like a musty basement, like, and again, I'm not trying to be very picky about these things, but a lot of times with first time visitors, your first impression is what you give. So, and I don't, and people think like, oh, well, if there's this one little thing, they're not going to come back to church. Well, no. Like, I think a lot of times it's not just one little thing, it's a bunch of little small things that eventually becomes one big thing. So if you see just a lot of misplaced junk in the hallways or in the
Stuff everywhere.
sanctuary, it smells. Oh yeah. And I remember when the first church I ever went to, my wife and I, we went through the church, and this is my very first church I'm pastoring, and everything looked good. But when you start getting towards the back of the church, there was like an old like CRT TV with like the wooden frame around it, like those old ones, just sitting out in the hallway. It doesn't work. It's broken. And I'm like, why is this sitting out in the hallway?
Because people don't want to throw stuff away.
Well, hey, people don't want, but it's like it didn't even work. So luckily I asked my treasurer about it. He goes, hey, if there's stuff that you want to get rid of that doesn't work, I mean, or you can find a place to put it, then do it. So we did. And actually there's a bunch of other junk and we ended up cleaning it up. And then guess what? We actually had classrooms that were usable for Sunday school because they weren't filled with just collect-alls. They weren't collect-all rooms of junk. So we did that. And next thing you know, it was like, oh my gosh, we actually have space. When we do VBS, we're not just doing it in one or two rooms. We could actually use our entire church and it looks clean and it looks nice. It's just simple stuff like that. Like, throw this junk out of here. We don't need it. So I think there's that. And then also, you know, I think also just how is your service? Is there an order? Does it flow? I mean, I know people have a difference of opinion of the greet your neighbor thing where, I mean, I'm sure your wife hates greet your neighbor. I'm yes. sure she does. But I know for some people, but I also feel like sometimes it's, I think the dilemma that a pastor has with meet your neighbor is if you know that your church members are not making themselves visible and talking to visitors when they come in, and then they finally get to the point in the service where it's meet your neighbor and then they can go meet them. First of all, it's too late because they already feel self-conscious that no one's talked to them for the first 15 minutes of service. But then the embarrassment that everyone's talking to everybody else and that visitor is still standing there by themselves and no one is really engaging them.
Yeah.
So I see how greet your neighbor can be one of those things that can be a blessing and can really make first-time visitors feel welcome and seen. But at the same time, it could be very disastrous as well. So I think, and again, I would say, you know, understand your culture. And as a pastor, are you training your people? Because again, if you can train your people to engage visitors without doing greet your neighbor, then don't do greet your neighbor. Like, because you don't need it. And plus greet your neighbors are because then you want to try to get on with the service and you can't because you have to like go, okay, everybody, let's get time for prayer. Let's sit back down. It's like you have to be like a teacher to a bunch of adults who don't want to sit down in service because they want to talk the whole time. So, you know.
Yeah, it's like that's one thing I struggle with as a worship leader for years for the churches that I worked at that did those, did the meet and greets thing. Like, you nailed it, right? They like to talk to each other. And as soon as you say, hey, turn around, greet your neighbor, say hello. It's like just cutting the cattle loose and letting them out of the farm, right? And they just go and they talk. And like, it's like, oh, all right, we got to get them back. We got to get them back into worship. So like a lot of times when I was leading worship and I did that, I just had the band start playing the next song. And that would almost just ring them back in. But yeah. You're right. You're exactly right. They just want to talk and talk and talk. So,
yeah. And then also like, you know, do you have, you know, do you have like things where you do open mic prayer requests where you ask prayer requests? And I mean, some churches do, some churches don't, but right. Sometimes that can get, you know, depending on who has the prayer request. Sometimes, you know, there's a difference between saying, oh, pray for my uncle. We just found out that he's having open heart surgery on Thursday. And then they sit back down. Okay. Let's pray for so-and-so's uncle. But then you could have somebody, you know, I had a doctor's appointment Thursday and I was there for 3 hours. And then the doctor went and saw me for like 5 seconds and told me that I have a spot on my prostate and they just go on.
It's super uncomfortable and cringy.
And it's cringy and it's uncomfortable. And it's like, you know, you could easily say, hey, I went to the doctor. They found some stuff. Be prayed for me. We don't need to hear your life story. And I know sometimes pastors are very good at kind of like shutting that down, but sometimes it almost seems like the pastor's being rude. It's like, you know, so it puts the pastor in a tough spot too when people go on and on and on. So a lot of times, and plus, depending on how many people have prayer requests, that can make your service be on time Or you could go overtime, and then people are complaining, why did we go overtime? Well, there was a lot of prayer needs. Like the whole prayer time took like 20 minutes of our service.
Yeah.
So if you want to
It's
get out on time, then we're going to have to think about how we're going to do that. And then also, if you're doing anything special or weird, and I don't mean necessarily weird, but if you're doing something special, like, oh, we have a Christian musician coming or magician coming on, or we're doing a baptism, you know, these are things that when you see some of these things happen, or sacraments, or you're having communion, make sure as a pastor you communicate what these elements are to the entire church. And you may think, oh, well, everyone knows what communion is, everyone knows what baptism is, but for the first time visitor, they may not know, or they may know what communion is, but they may be in a tradition where only people who are members of the church can take communion, or only people who have had a relationship with Christ can take communion, or is it an open table where anybody could take communion and everybody is welcome? It doesn't matter if you're a member of the church or you're not a member of the church, if you're a Christian or not, like some churches do that. And it's like, make sure when there's a special event happening during your service, when a visitor's visiting, make sure that gets explained so that they can feel like they're a part of the service and they're just not kind of like the odd kid out, and you know, they feel like they're included to the plans of what's happening within service.
Yeah, I
I
mean,
think those would be
it's.
kind of my, those would kind of be like my big three. I mean, there's a lot of things I could go on to with the service, but I think those would be my big three. Just, you know, make sure you check the senses. Make sure, how do you order your service and how does it flow? And then also, if you're doing anything special, make sure you overly communicate what you're doing and why we're doing it and how one can participate in this.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. I also think too that like something you said was like you got to think people that are coming maybe for the first time are unchurched and have never been to church, and so they don't know how this thing works, and so they may not stand during worship, they may not stand during prayer, they may not know how, you know, things work, and that's okay.
Yeah.
The body of believers have to be accommodating to those folks because they may be different than you and I. They may have a different experience. And so I think a lot of times we get lost in just doing things the way that we've always done them. And I feel like we hammer that all the time on this show. But another thing I thought about too, like you said something about sharing prayer requests or sharing testimonies or sharing special
Yeah.
music or whatever. I've worked in larger churches. That doesn't work, right? Because you have to get to the next service and your timing services like to the T. So like, you have your welcome and you have your two songs and you have your video announcements and you have two more songs and then you have the sermon bumper and then you have the sermon and then every service is 60 minutes and it's to the T, right? And so if you have a 9 and an 11, it gives you that buffer between services and kind of gives you a chance to recoup. I've been in situations where both services are identical and they're 60 minutes and you're in and out. I've also had churches where we've had three services and the first two were identical. And by the time we get to the third service, you can kind of expound on things because there's no service after that. And so you can kind of breathe a little bit by the time you get to the third service. Also, you're exhausted, right? So, yeah, I think you used the word mindful, but like I think people just need to be mindful of the fact that even if it's just one person walking in your church on a Sunday morning, that one person is a guest. And they may not have, you know, they may have no background in church culture whatsoever. On the flip side, have different sets of circumstances. And so when we walk in, we may not necessarily want to get connected or plugged in. We just want to go to church. We just want to sit there. We just want to soak up what the word is, what the pastor's saying, and a part of the conversation that Alicia and I were having yesterday was like, part of the hesitancy, I guess, in getting plugged into a church again is I have to be okay with going and not serving. Or if I do serve, I have to be okay with like, okay, let's do this once a month, or let's do this twice a month and not do it every single week. And I mean, Scott, because there was a period of time be between ministry assignments from where you were and where you are now. It's really like it's liberating in a sense because you know how demanding the church is of your time. And so, yeah, everybody's different and the circumstances may be different. And so, I remember we went and visited this church and I had lunch with the pastor and said, hey, would love to help you guys do whatever, but we also just need to sit and just go to church. And he was like, great, that's cool. We're glad you're here.
Yep, absolutely. And I think that's important too, because even like, there's been a couple of times where I've been like trying to look for volunteers to do Sunday school for our kids. And, I had someone who said they want to teach. I said, what age group? She told me. And I said, okay. And I knew she's like a very busy person, like a very high executive for a corporation in Columbus. So a lot of times she's not there every Sunday. So I said, how about I just plan you to teach once a month, third Sundays? Does that work for you? Yes. So she puts it on her calendar. So even in her hectic schedule, she knows the third Sunday of each month, that's what I'm teaching Sunday school. And we go from there. And it seems to work well. And there's been no issues. But at the same time, if she says, hey, I want to do two Sundays, I'll increase it. If someone says, hey, I need to take a step back, I'll decrease it. I work with people because I know that, I understand that, sometimes it can be taxing if you're just doing something every single day. And not only that, but you also don't feel appreciated for the time and the work you had. And I know that could be a whole different podcast episode. One thing I was also saying about the idea of senses is also signage. And I don't think people realize how big signage is, from understanding how do I even enter into your building to where's the bathrooms, where's everything. So if you're a church that has the means to be able to have signage to kind of help point people to where everything is, that's great. And if you don't, that's why you have greeters and ushers. That's why you could say the example I gave earlier. Oh, well, thank you for coming. Right here is our sanctuary. If you need to use the bathrooms, they're right there. And if you need any more information, you could talk to Susan at the Welcome Center. Like, you could direct people to find people to help you know to where you need to go. Oh, where's the office at? Oh, office is there. But if you're an usher and all you're doing is saying, welcome to church, and you hand them a bulletin and don't even tell them that here's where you sit or where the sanctuary is, then you kind of have to, then you kind of defeat your purpose. So I think, when it comes to sites, either having people being able to direct people to where they need to go, or make sure you have proper signage so people can find their way to where they need to go, where the Sunday school classes are, where the church offices are, where the bathrooms are. And I think those are very important too. So now let's talk about the end, the other end of the bun, the sandwich, the conclusion. So you have a visitor come in and they feel welcome. You're doing everything right. They go sit in the service. They have a great, wonderful time at service. And then they leave. Now, this is also determining that A, you have all their information so you can follow up with them. But even when they leave, if you're a pastor, thank them for coming. Ask, and then again, hey, did you fill, just asking, hey, did you fill out a form so we have a way to follow up with you so we can just, and then don't say follow up with you, just can we follow up with you so we can kind of get feedback on your experience at service? Usually people are more receptive to kind of hear that. I think that's the first thing you need to do is make sure you have their information. And then that week, What I find so impactful is A, not only, I call it like my 2x2. I call it my 2x2. First, pastor, one, make sure you've already connected with that person in your church when they left. Contact them, and you don't send a letter, but like send a call, send a personal email, but just say, hey, thank you so much for coming. We definitely appreciate you. You know, we're here for you. If you have any questions about the church, you can talk to me directly, and blah, blah, blah. And I think that's the one part. And I think a lot of times with churches, when it comes to follow-up, it's always on the pastor and the pastoral staff to do the follow-up. And I see that as not effective. Because in my years of ministry, when I have followed up with people, either they say, oh yeah, church was great, can't wait to be back, they never show up. And part of me goes, well, if you don't show up, then something's going on. Or as a pastor, you think, okay, well, did they lie to me? Did something happen? You know, there's a lot of questions. But here's where my other one is, where my two comes in. Have somebody from that church also reach out to that person and talk to them. A member of the church, not an elder, not the secretary, not another church staff member, but a member of the church. And bonus, if you were someone who did your homework at the beginning and you're that person who said, oh, hey, want to come sit with me? Or you get up and you go sit with them and you talk to them. You could exchange numbers. You're already doing not only the experiential part, but then I'll just follow up like, oh, hey, it's so good to get to know you. I hope you can come again. And then if you happen to exchange numbers with that person, you can then call them and say, hey, it's so-and-so at church the other day. I just want to say thank you so much. And I think that in itself, having a pastor contact you and having a church member contact you really goes a long way. And it really kind of seals the deal with people feeling like, man, this church is a kind church. It's a loving church. I feel comfortable. People made me feel welcome and comforted here. And I'm probably going to come back next Sunday. Or if you have a vacation plan, at least I'm going to plan on coming back again because I felt so welcomed coming here. So that's kind of like my 2x2 rule. Make sure pastoral staff contacts them and make sure a church member contacts them for follow-up. And even if you have to have like a special ministry of people who do follow-up, do that. But I mean, one of the funniest stories about this is when my dad started going back to church, he went by himself. He went to church, had a good experience, got to talk with the pastor, and someone from the church actually went and called him to talk to him. But then there was a ministry where any first-time visitors, there was a group of ladies that baked homemade cookies, and they would deliver them to your house with a little tag that says, hey, thank you for attending church with us from Talmadge First Church of God. And usually they'll knock on the door and the someone will talk with them and say, oh, hey, I'm so-and-so. So where this story gets funny is my dad goes to church. I have no clue about, my dad had no clue about this ministry. Well, both my parents are at work. Me and my sister are at home because we're just home from school. And all of a sudden we see this strange car pull into our driveway. And and the way the person describes it is there was lights on in the house and then there's lights off. I knock on the door, more lights turn off, and I don't hear anybody. So I thought, that's weird. So knock on the door again, doesn't hear anything. So puts the cookies down in front of the door, gets into her car, and as she's backing out, she sees the door open, and my sister like reaches out her hand to grab the cookies and brings it back into the door. And it's still a funny story because we didn't know who this person was. We didn't know it was a member of the church. Me and my sister weren't going to church at that time. And they probably didn't even know they had kids. But for me and my sister, we're like stranger danger. So we're like locking the doors. We're hiding. We're turning off the lights, making sure no one, you know, we have our phone. We have a phone. We're in a room with a phone in case someone breaks in. We're calling 911. Like but it's still a funny story. And even that person who delivered cookies still tells that story to this day about, yeah, I remember I dropped cookies off for you and like I was wondering what the heck's going on because all the lights just suddenly turned off and I thought I saw motion in the windows and now there's nobody in the windows. But again, I think when it comes to following up, pastor and parishioner, And I think you'll have a, and I think if you can do those three things well from the beginning, the middle, and the end, you're probably going to see a lot of more first-time visitor retention in your church. What are your thoughts, Micah?
I think there are subtle ways to not bombard people. I'm being completely honest. And if you do like the subtle things like you're talking about and do them well and keep it simple, you're going to have a good, you know, connections team, and you're going to have a good retention and visitors. And just keep in mind too, that like, you could do everything right and people just may not come back. And it's nothing that you may be doing wrong. It's just that they just may not feel like that's the church for them, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah.
And that's fine. And I think, you know, and I think, and especially, you know, visitors, you know, especially if you're asking, if as a pastor, if you're following visitor to see how their experience was, and they say, oh, everything was great, and they don't show up, you have to kind of remember that it's not necessarily anything you did wrong. It could just be at the end of the day, they just didn't think it was a good fit for them. They may have loved the church. They didn't think anything was wrong. They thought it was a great experience. But at the same time, they just may have felt, you know, I'm going to try a different church. You know, because they may be like, you know, I just moved to the area. I'm not just going to go to the same church that shows me kindness. I'm going to try some other churches. And then at the end, it'll be like, okay, you know, I think this church was probably one of the ones that are most memorable that I still continue to think about. So that's the one I'm going to go to. Like really? So a lot of times when it comes to, if a first-time visitor doesn't stay at your church, you know, as a pastor, don't beat yourself up over it. I think as a congregation, don't beat yourself over it. But at the same time, I also would say as congregations and maybe as church leaders, don't be constantly bombarding your pastor like, oh, how come this person never came back? How come this person never came back? Because if you have to ask that question, then it really goes to a point of where's your heart at when it comes to your visitors. Do you see these people as, hey, we want you to be invited into our, you know, hey, thank you for coming here. We want to really teach you about the love and grace and mercy of Jesus Christ. And that's your whole thing. You know, we're here to just kind of be the ambassadors or the extension of the kingdom of God to people in their lives. Or ours, our goal is we want to make sure that you become a member of our church. Because if you're a member of our church, that means we can check off that saying, hey, we're growing. You know, we're getting extra tithe money, which means we're making budget. And if it's the administrative side of why you're doing anything for first-time visitors, it has to do with numbers, then I feel like if you go in with that heart and that attitude, you're probably not going to be retaining a lot of visitors because people are probably going to smell that a mile away on what you're trying to do. You know, people aren't dumb, especially people who are coming to church maybe for the first time or maybe the first time in a long time. They're really going to know if you're being genuine, you really care about them, or you just are kind of trying to get them to become part of your social club.
We're on the other side. Like if you're a pastor or a former pastor of a church and you're just trying to go somewhere, like, you know how things work on the inside. So it's like, you know, what works and what doesn't. And so I don't know, just an interesting conversation I thought about yesterday.
It is. And friends, what are some of your thoughts about first-time visitor retention? Where do you feel like you're succeeding at? Is there something that me and Micah didn't mention that you say, hey, this is something that we do and we think it's really great and we want to let other churches know about it? You know, feel free to mention that in the comments. mention that on our Facebook page, or even send us an email at our website, thescottsummon.com. Or maybe there's the opposite. Maybe you're someone who does notice there's an old broken TV in the middle of your narthex that doesn't get moved. And anytime you try to move it, you are met with opposition. And it's like, what do I do? Well, you know, we like to hear those stories too. And again, if there's something that you say that resonates with you, then you go ahead and send a copy of this podcast to your elder board or to your pastor, have them listen to it and go, oh, yeah, if someone else is saying this is an issue, then maybe we should listen to these people. But, you know, whether you listen to the Scott Stebbins podcast or you don't, and take any of the advice we give or you don't, that's okay. We're just glad that you're willing to listen to us. And that's it for us. So, guys, thank you so much for listening. We hope you have a good day, and we'll be back on with another episode. Take care. Thank you for listening to the Scott Stebbins podcast. The Scott Stebbins podcast is made possible by support from our listeners. We thank listeners like Patty and Scott, whose support goes to this podcast's continual growth and maintenance. If you want to support this podcast, you can do so in a number of ways. First, feel free to give us a 5-star rating if you enjoyed this episode and share it with your friends. If you'd like to financially support the Scott Stebbins Podcast, you can go to the website ko-fi.com/the-scott-stebbins-podcast. That website again is ko-fi.com/the-scott-stebbins-podcast. Thank you so much for listening.